Thank you for calling. This lesson is designed to deal with problems faced by many people. How can we know God exists, and how do we answer questions raised by skeptics and atheists about the Bible? We hope you will listen to this message with an open mind, and questions are addressed at the end of the lesson. Why Jesus Christ and not some other religion? As we look into the world today and we see people throughout the world following different religions, one has to ask, but why should I follow Jesus Christ? Why shouldn't I follow Buddha or Muhammad or perhaps the Hindu faith? And certainly it is true that these great religions have offered a great deal to man over the history of time. Some of the most beautiful writings and the most beautiful expressions that have been discovered in these faiths. And yet it is fairly easy to see that these are the works of men and not the directions of God. There are at least two methods that we can use to determine that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that the Bible is the Word of God, and not these other writings which are frequently claimed to be so. The first of these methods involves analyzing these writings to see if they are accurate. This can be initiated from virtually any field that one wishes to investigate, but let's take a look at it for just a moment from the field of science. There are scientific statements contained within the Bible that could not possibly have been based upon the wisdom of the men that wrote it. This is not true of the other great religions. If one reads, for example, the book of Leviticus and examines the scientific statements contained there of a medical nature, one can find medical statements of infinite variety that are known today to be accurate. In Leviticus, the 17th chapter, beginning with verse 11, for example, and going through verse 15, we see various statements about the value of blood that were unknown in this country, even around the time of George Washington. Blood, according to the Bible, is of value. It is the life of the flesh. And yet even at the time of the American Revolution, people were being bled to cure them of their various diseases. In nearly every scientific field we can imagine, the Bible is without mistake. This is not true of the other great religions. One place where we can see this is in the simple question of what holds the earth up. The Greeks thought the earth was held up by Atlas on the shoulders of this giant man. When we examine some of the Far Eastern religions, we see that the earth was held on the back of a giant catfish. Every time that catfish went underwater, there was a tidal wave. In the Hindu faith in the past, it has been their belief that the earth was held on the back of four elephants standing on a turtle swimming in a sea of milk. This kind of mistake we don't see in the Bible. As a matter of fact, the Bible gives no indication of the support for the earth, and only one passage, a poetic passage, found in Job, the 26th chapter in the 7th verse, is the subject even mentioned. And there we are told, "He hangeth the earth upon nothing," a statement even in its poetic nature that is accurate. Not only is the Bible accurate and able to be tested, which is not true of other great religions, but especially the system that the Bible teaches can be seen to be wise and without mistake. A simple examination of the world in which we live can demonstrate this very clearly. Those countries that have followed other great religions, which basically espouse a concept of pantheism, have suffered the consequences of that belief. Pantheism teaches man that he is just part of nature, and that he should not manipulate or control nature in any way. He shouldn't build dams to control the water to irrigate his crops. He should not manipulate nature in any way, shape, or form. In the Bible, in Genesis 1, beginning with verse 28, God told man that he should have dominion over the fish, over the fowl, over the beast of the earth. The fact that you listen to this tape with a relatively full stomach and reasonably comfortable surroundings in all probability is because of the fact that your ancestors generally followed that admonition. Many people today are starving to death. At least part of this problem is the fact that some of them believe that some of the animals that we eat are actually reincarnated ancestors. Thus, they place restrictions on the food that they are able to partake of. We have to admire these people who would rather starve than violate their religious conscience. But in Acts, the 11th chapter, especially in verse 9, God told Peter that he should not call anything common. And the implication of that passage and other passages is that God would have man eat anything that God has prepared for man. Look at the relationship between man and woman. Many religions teach polygamy, the idea that a man can have many wives, or polyandry, the idea that a woman can have many husbands. Only Jesus Christ made a command of the relationship of one man, one wife, for life. In Mark, the 10th chapter, beginning with the 4th verse and continuing down through the passage, Jesus clearly emphasized this. In verse 6, he said, "But from the beginning of the creation God made them male and female, and for this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife." Notice that's singular. He didn't say wives. "And they twain shall be one flesh." You can't be one flesh if there are many individuals. And so when they are no more twain but one flesh, what therefore God hath joined together, let not man put asunder. God's marriage system, when followed the way God would have it to be followed, is a beautiful, functional system. Another example is the worship system that we are given. There are many religions today that teach man that he must make long pilgrimages to worship God, that he must build huge golden statues, or huge shrines, huge temples, which absorb all of man's resources and all of his labor in a rather vain and frivolous type of activity. Jesus Christ said in Matthew 18 and verse 20, "Wherever two or three are gathered together in my name, there will I be also." We don't need a huge statue. We don't need an enormous edifice. We don't need a long pilgrimage or journey to worship the God of the Bible. As a matter of fact, in 1 Corinthians 3, verse 16, we are told that we are the temple of God, individuals, wherever they meet. That's a beautiful concept. As a matter of fact, the whole Bible portrayal of man is that man is that being that has a personal relationship to his God. In Revelation 3 and verse 20, Jesus tells us that he stands at the door and knocks. God seeking man, an interested, personal, involved God, wanting to help man solve his problems. In John the 10th chapter, beginning with verse 14 and continuing through verse 18, Jesus describes his relationship as the shepherd and us as the sheep. You can't improve upon the system that Jesus Christ gave. We don't accept Jesus Christ simply because we have inherited that faith, but because when one investigates the teachings and the systems of the Bible, one finds that there can be no better way to live, no surer way to go. Our hope is in Jesus, the Christ, the Son of God.
The message you have just heard was brought to you by the Church of Christ.